Well, welcome back. We're all going to be moving through these four Brahma Viharas quite quickly because we only have the 2 days at this point to explore them. But what I'm hoping to offer really is a kind of a sampler, so you get a sense of at least a little taste of each one of them, and then in your own practice after this weekend you can continue developing them. So last night and this morning I referred to the diamond model of how these four can interact with each other, and we spent the morning really working on the foundation of metta, of kindness, which is at the bottom point of the diamond. And this afternoon I'd like to move to compassion, the second of these four. And as I said earlier, the idea is that when this kindness, attitude of kindness, comes into contact with difficulty, it naturally manifests as compassion. And the English word compassion literally means feeling with. So Sharon Salzberg talks about it as the capacity of the heart to vibrate in response to another's pain or in response to our own pain. And as I said last night, for many people this is counterintuitive, because consciously or unconsciously we might come to the spiritual practice to get away from suffering. You know, our biological beings are wired to avoid pain and distress and suffering. So this invitation to cultivate compassion, it requires some courage to actually turn in that direction instead of our usual habit of avoiding and going into denial and frantically trying to escape it. But in the analogy I gave last night of diving through the big wave, if we can have the courage to do that, we usually come out the other side in better shape. And in the Buddha's teachings, in that analogy of the two wings to awakening of wisdom and compassion, throughout the Buddha's teachings there is this very close relationship between the two. We need to understand our suffering. When we can understand our suffering, then it becomes a means to freedom. Because if we don't have the clear seeing, the insight to understand how we're making ourselves and others unhappy, then we can't do anything about it. So in all Buddhist traditions, there is this strong relationship between wisdom and compassion. And the wisdom that's being talked about here is really the understanding of the Buddha's core teaching of the Four Noble Truths. I think probably most of you are familiar with this teaching, which really sets out a very straightforward formula of that shows the cause of our problems and the way out of them. Now, unfortunately, I don't have time to go into this in depth, but just to recap, the First Noble Truth is just the simple statement that there is dukkha. And dukkha is often translated as suffering, but that can be unfortunate because many of us in some ways live very fortunate lives. We might think, well, I don't suffer, I'm doing pretty well really. But this word dukkha actually refers to a whole spectrum, from the most intense anguish and despair at one end through to just that more subtle existential sense of unsatisfactoriness. So even as you sit here right now, are you 100% comfortable, content, and happy? Or is there some slight sense of, well, if this knee pain would just lessen a bit, or if I didn't feel so sleepy, or if I hadn't had that third cookie at lunchtime, I could have another coffee. You know, there's often something in the background, some sense that things are not quite right, and that sense of not quite rightness is also a manifestation of dukkha. So that is the first noble truth, that there is this unsatisfactoriness. And the second noble truth is that there is a cause of it, and that cause is the wanting, the craving, the clinging, the wishing that things were different, the sense of there's always something out there that's going to make me happy that I don't have yet, that sort of drives the whole hamster wheel kind of project. And the third noble truth is that this craving, this suffering can be ended by letting go, releasing, freeing ourselves from the clinging. And the fourth noble truth is the path that leads to this freedom from suffering, the Noble Eightfold Path. So that's a very quick overview, a 6 or 5 minute introduction of something that's really a lifetime of practice to be explored. So I just wanted to give you the context for this compassion practice, because it can be so deep when we understand its relationship to suffering. And just to name, sometimes I think particularly if we're going to talk about geographical or cultural stereotypes, sometimes in this, in the US, there's a lot of pressure to be successful, to be on top of our game, to be seen to be doing well and all of that. And even the idea of acknowledging that things aren't going well can sometimes be seen as like a personal inadequacy or an admission of failure of some kind, just to acknowledge that there's that I'm experiencing challenges. So we might unconsciously go into denial to sort of maintain a particular self-image. So our tendency to deny and avoid suffering is sometimes reinforced collectively as well as in our own individual habit patterns. On the other hand, you may also have experienced the freedom that comes from being able to be authentic, when you can really name to people the truth of what's going on for you in the right circumstances. That can bring enormous relief and freedom. And the more we can do that, the more we begin to expand our capacity to be with what's difficult. As I was talking earlier this morning, this process is one of gently expanding our comfort zones to be able to meet more and more of our experience with this fundamental attitude of kindness and compassion. And again, this links to the wisdom aspect of the path, because when we start to connect with our own suffering and with other suffering, we start to understand its universality. That being born a human being, nobody is exempt from dukkha. And we stop taking it quite so personally. We don't identify with it to the same extent we once did. And we can touch into the understanding of this is not personal. Truth of anatta, that this does not belong to me. I'm not uniquely flawed because I suffer. And if that sounds a little too lofty or abstract, there's quite a lot of research these days in the field of compassion about the health benefits of practicing compassion for oneself and others. Reduced psychological stress, lower blood pressure. There's many, many studies out there. So hopefully that too will be an insight, incentive to turn towards these difficulties. Earlier, I introduced the idea of these practices as being really practices of listening, of tuning in and attuning to our own beings, our own bodies and hearts and minds. And this is particularly true of compassion. You know, in the later Buddhist tradition, we developed the ideal of Kuan Yin, who's sitting here on my left, and she is known in the Zen tradition as she who hears the cries of the world. So it's great that here we are in a Zen-oriented hall. We have this reminder to listen. She's also described as having listening as if she had ears on every cell of her body, which is a pretty striking image. So when we're cultivating this quality of compassion, it's that really deep listening. This is one way that she's presented, but in some traditions you see her sitting in this kind of posture. And this is a balance between the deep listening and stillness of meditation and then the movement towards action, So this compassion is not just listening, it's the readiness to spring into action to relieve suffering. So that balance of stability and movement towards what's difficult, I think, is really powerful. So that's just a very brief overview to give you a flavor of compassion. I'd like to offer an actual guided meditation now, so just taking a few moments to settle in again.